welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or is that for a thing with Dear John and Hank?
It's a comedy podcast about death, where me and my brother John, we answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. Hey, John.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
You know that part in Rushmore? Actually, you don't, because you're not familiar with Rushmore. I can't believe you haven't seen Rushmore at least 12 times. How could you even claim to be my brother? Anyway, there's this part in Rushmore where one of the characters says, I ain't even here, Sergeant. I'm in Cheyenne, Wyoming. That's how I am. I'm not really here, to be honest with you. I'm in Cheyenne, Wyoming. I'm just like, I'm working a lot, and I am engrossed in my work, and I am not really capable of thinking about anything else. How are you?
Good. How do I get you here? I need a brother.
No,
for my podcast.
I have to stay in Cheyenne, unfortunately. I have to stay in Cheyenne, Wyoming as long as possible because it is the closest that I really ever come to pure happiness. Or actually, it's not like happiness, but pure like fulfillment or engagement or whatever. Like, you know how you spend your whole entire life like stuck inside of the prison of yourself and there's no escaping it, and it's sort of like a horror movie in that like you live inside of a consciousness.
Stop trying to make me uncomfortable with the prison of my body, John. I want to not recognize. I don't want to think about
it. And lots of people are able to very successfully not think about it, and I actually think that is the correct strategy. So we can just move on to the short poem if you'd like.
Well, first, I have to say that I got a comb on an airplane, and it's falling apart in my hands. And I'm like, why do they even give me this terrible comb? Why do they make it out of something that is incapable of holding its combiness? Second, I have to say, John, how are you feeling about PodCon?
I'm very excited about PodCon, but if we can briefly return to the issue of your comb, I just want to note, Hank, that there are first world problems, and then there are the free comb I got for sitting in business class on an international flight did not live up to my expectations problems. Because I know a lot about air travel, and so I know how you get those free combs, and if you ever complain about that again, I'm disowning you.
Yeah, I guess I was complaining about it. I've had it for a while and I've been using it, and I guess I've been fidgeting with it too much, and now it's missing a number of tines.
Well, life is hard and full of disappointments. I'm very excited for PodCon. For those of you who don't know, there is a podcast conference coming up planned by my brother, Hank, and some other people. It's in Seattle, and it's going to be lots of fun. I'm going to be there. Tons and tons and tons of people are going
to
be there.
Yeah. I decided to reach out to two of my friends in the podcasting world, Travis McElroy and Joseph Fink of Welcome to Night Vale. And they were like, yeah, that is a thing that should exist. And then we got together with the rest of their teams and with the rest of my team, who's here on this podcast with me right now. And we're doing an Indiegogo campaign for it. And it's going well.
Yeah, you can attend remotely if you don't want to travel to Seattle and or can't travel to Seattle, but you can also attend in real life with your physical body in Seattle, and it'll be just like listening to podcasts, only, you know, like instead of spending the time that you listen to podcasts in that sort of like non-sensorial place where audio can take you, you'll have to be with your physical body in a room with a bunch of other people with bodies. So, I mean, upsides, downsides.
And there will be many amazing and weird things happening, but for remote backers, we'll be sending out all of the stuff that happens in audio form. But for the people who are going to be there in real life, it is nice to do things with your real physical body, right, John?
Yes, absolutely.
I like my real physical body.
Unfortunately, even though you have no choice.
It hurts sometimes. You do have no choice. That's a bit of a, I don't like this. Isn't it nice sometimes to not have a choice? Because I hate choices. So I would like, if it was like, what body do you want to be in this morning? That sounds like a lot of work, like stress. I have to think about that now.
Right.
It's hard enough picking pants.
Yeah, no, for me, the ideal situation would be if it was like, do you want to be in a body today? And I'd be like, nah.
Just no body at all.
Yeah. No. I'm going to take the pleasures of the senses and just get rid of him completely. That's not true. You're right. No, it's much more complicated than that. Can I read you a short poem?
Okay, sure.
Everything is more complicated than you want to make it. Nothing fits on a bumper sticker. We got a short poem suggestion from Crystal. She wanted me to read a poem by Rupi Kaur, so I'm going to. This one is very short. I am water, soft enough to offer life, tough enough to drown it away. Just a good short poem, Hank.
Mm-hmm.
Good short poem about water, toughness, and softness.
You know, I did think for a tiny bit that the poem that you were reading was about what can and cannot fit on a bumper sticker. And I was like, ooh, that one was interesting.
I guess actually that's a pretty good poem. As poems that fit on bumper stickers go, that was a pretty good one. Hank, should we answer some questions from our listeners?
Sure. Let's do that. This one is from Grace, and I thought that it was interesting because Grace has a pretty cool job, but is also worried about it. Dear Hank and John, I'm about to complete my first year working in a somewhat well-known online website covering politics that shall apparently go unnamed. I don't want to do anything else besides the job I'm doing, but I'm struggling with the current war on the media. It seems like the media, in quotation marks, is such an undefined character. What is the media? Am I part of the media? Am I as culpable as the makers of Drudge Report? How can I handle when friends or families blame the media for how they receive their news? And most of all, how can I, a fairly low down on the food chain but still with a platform to express my views to others, make a difference in a fairly stubborn political bubble? News and newspapers, and this is news, G-U-N-S. Nope, G-N-U-S. Oh, God.
G-U-N-S is just guns. I mean,
what's a new? Is it like some kind of animal?
It is exactly like, it's not just like some kind of animal. It is some kind of animal.
I found it. It's some kind of animal.
Yeah.
Anyway, news and newspapers, Grace.
Yeah, I mean, Grace, the good news is that hopefully you knew when you were getting into this job what you were getting into, because people have hated the media since time immemorial. Like, there's been a lack of trust in newspapers since they were newspapers.
Yeah, it does. It feels a little like we had a brief moment of everybody was like kind of on board with it. And now it's like moved back into the being like everything is fake. And if it doesn't.
I don't think people think everything is fake. I think people think that everything is shaped right. by bias and that they can't trust any facts. But I also think that's largely because people, and to an extent, news media organizations aren't doing a good job of differentiating between reporting and analysis.
Yeah, it has become very clear to me that even I don't have a really great grasp on that. Like, I know the difference. I know what the difference is, and I know that like collecting and disseminating information is extremely valuable. And without that, there would be no conversations worth having. But I mostly don't consume, like, here's what happened. I consume, what does this thing that happened mean?
Yeah, I think the great risk, Hank, and we've talked about this a lot, is that in general, a lot of times when people are trying to contextualize the news or present themselves as trying to contextualize the news, what they're really trying to do is to frame the news to meet your expectations or to fulfill the confirmation bias of a particular group or whatever. Like, it's not really about context deep down. It's about framing.
Yeah.
And people like frames. They want to look at the world through the frames that, you know, kind of confirm what they already believe to be true. And so I understand why that stuff works, but it isn't news.
Right. But it is the thing that you get views on, and that, like, that's where we're at. You know, there's this this problem where if we are looking at what we should be consuming is different from what we want to consume. And so when it comes down to like, okay, should I read the Wikipedia page on this controversial topic, or should I read what my feed is throwing me about, like, the take that it most makes me feel good about the way that I feel about the world and most confirms my worldview and my understanding of the people who I like and don't like, I'm going to go with that second thing, because reading a Wikipedia page is boring.
Yeah, but also because going with the second thing allows your mind to indulge exciting and surreal conspiracy theories and that feels good, right? Like, there's a reason that everybody believes, including me, by the way, believes conspiracy theories that if they were proven to be true would be great news for them. It's because, like, it's an incredibly attractive thing. It's like gossip on the largest possible scale. I mean, we have this tension between what is good for us and what feels good in the moment, not just when it comes to news, right? Like, I have it all the time when it comes to McDonald's. I think we live in a world of abundance. We live in a world of abundant information, or at least those of us who are blessed to live it in the parts of the world that are defined by abundance. We live in a world of abundant information, abundant food, abundant this, abundant that, where it's not about how much stuff you can have, because you can have a lot of stuff. You can acquire a lot of combs relatively inexpensively. I feel like we have to get better as a species at understanding that more is not always better, and what feels good right now is not always what we actually want.
Yeah. So what would I say to Grace? I would say we all, especially the people in media and whatever that is, and of course, like, the great thing about blaming the media is that, of course, whenever you say it, you mean the media that you don't like, and so you could say it and... Yeah, so it doesn't. It's not about you. It's about people having opinions about something that they saw. But trying to find ways to get information across that is both accurate and is new and is contextualized and but also entertaining. And so it's like figuring out ways to do that. That's what's important. And doing that without resorting to how can I write a headline that sounds misleading so that people will click on it. Because I have gotten really frustrated by this new trend of having really great articles that have really bad headlines, because 90% of people only read the headline, and so 90% of people come away with an inaccurate point of view on the situation.
Yeah.
So don't do that.
Well, I think it's hard, and I think it's complicated, and I have to say that it's very difficult to go against human nature or the whims of the market forces. So yes. Let's move on to another question.
Okay. Sorry, Grace.
Yeah, I don't think we have any good news on that front, Grace. We both feel a little discouraged. This question comes from Haneen, who writes, "Dear Green Brothers, my name's Haneen, and I'm a big fan of the pod and both you guys. So recently in our Arabic class, we were discussing a poem in which the poet was praising a certain king, saying that he built his kingdom to reach higher than Gemini, and our teacher explained this choice of constellation, aside from it rhyming with the rest of the poem, because, quote, Gemini is the highest constellation. I was taken aback by this statement. Is that true? Can a constellation even be high? Aren't they all a bunch of stars floating in endless space? And also, it made me think, does a poet or a writer have the right to mess with science and actual facts just for the sake of making their work sound beautiful and poetic? P.S. Sorry for any grammatical mistakes. English is not my native language, as you may have probably noticed. I might die at any moment. Haneen." First off, I just want to say that this email has fewer grammatical mistakes than almost any email we've ever received.
Yep, you're quite good at that. Also, excellent sign-off.
Excellent sign-off. It's true, you might die at any moment. Uh-huh. Hey, so I liked this question, Hank, because it kind of asks questions for both of us. Does a writer have a right to mess with science and actual facts just for the sake of making your work sound beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
A question that I know a thing or two about. And then secondarily, is there such a thing as a high constellation?
Well, in terms of distance from the Earth, all constellations are, well, for the most part, are made up of stars that are very far away from each other. So they appear close to each other in the plane of the sky, but they are varying distances away. There are some exceptions to that where some star clusters in a constellation are actually part of a grouping in space, but mostly that is not the case. But they are also, you know... So certainly the higher a star is, like the further away from it is, for the most part, that means it's farther away from us. And so the really high constellations are the ones that are made up of stars that you can't even see.
But I think it's not that like stars near the top of our sky are necessarily further away than stars near the bottom of our sky.
No, well, indeed, a star, like where a star is in the sky changes all night long and also depending on where you are on Earth. So there's,
right.
Yeah, there is no star that is at the top of the sky. First of all, because the sky is a a dome. And so the top would just be like whatever happens to be right above you at the moment, I guess. Because it's not like what's on the north side. No, it's but that's going to change anyway. Like all that stuff moves around. Moves around all night because the Earth is spinning around.
It is a matter of perspective.
Correct. And then, yes. So I don't know if there is, I don't, but I know nothing about constellations, so I cannot tell you if there's something particularly high about Gemini. Maybe there's something.
Nor can I tell you anything. However, I can tell you that the stars in Orion's belt, there's a very visible constellation from Indiana. I don't know how visible it is in the rest of the world. Orion, the hunter, there's these three stars that look like they're in a complete like line, and they're very bright in the Indiana sky, and they are literally hundreds of light years apart from each other. Like, they are further away from each other than they are from us.
Yeah.
It's so mind-blowing to think that. They look inches apart, and they are so, so, so far apart. As well, for the second
nice,
question.
Nice visualizations you can experience. There's actually a kind of game, but it's more of just like a simulator thing where you can download this software and you can like go around, like you can go from the Earth and you can move off and see what the sky looks like from other places, and it's very cool.
That sounds cool. We'll put a link on the Patreon, patreon.com/DearHankandJohn, and you don't have to pay to get this.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the things are free, but you can pay. We won't get mad. The second question, though, I think is a really interesting one, because there are times when I think it's okay to mess with facts, but you've got to know that you're messing with them. Or that's my theory anyway. I did this in The Fault in Our Stars where there was a line I liked that some infinities are bigger than others, which is true. But the way that Hazel talks about that is untrue. And I liked the tension of that. I think looking back, I would have made it clear that Hazel was wrong somehow, because I think a lot of people walked away from that thinking that there are more numbers between 0 and 2 than there are between 0 and 1, which is not true. and I wish that I had not accidentally misinformed a large swath of a generation of American teenagers about infinite cardinality, but I did, so no getting around that. I think in general, like, you have to work with the world as you find it as a writer, and part of that is trying to be honest about science. But there are also times in my work, and lots of people would say this is a bad thing about them, where I've taken things that are true in science and tried to apply them to other things in life where they may or may not be true. Like the idea that energy isn't created or destroyed. Well, that is not an idea that you can scientifically apply to the human spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I think that is a common thing that happens, where we try to appeal to the things that we know about science, the realities of science, and we try to apply them to things that aren't actually affected by them. But in general, yeah. If you like, I feel like that if you like, certainly it has to be internally consistent. So one of the great things about writing is that like you don't have to write inside of our universe with our universe's rules. Like there are other universes you can write inside of. But if your stuff exists inside of this universe, you're gonna get called out if you are creating a thing that does not exist. But if it's magical realism, do it up. Like that's one of the great things about fiction, is that we can see, like we can imagine universes that are different from ours, and sometimes those things are going to be resonant in ways that are like beyond just how, you know, it affects the story and like, you know, beyond just creating a cool world. There's also truths that can be told that way. But it is also, it can be very, it can be a dangerous tool, because you, especially if you're trying to do more than, like, create more than beauty, if you're trying to create ideas and you're appealing to ideas that, like, you're creating truths that aren't actually true, then that's a really good way to sell an ideology that isn't accurate. And I often see that in discourse more than in fiction, where people are like, well, I know that this particular example of this thing is made up, but it's indicative of a larger truth. I know that what I'm saying right now, I understand that I was caught lying or citing something that was fake and I didn't realize was fake, but it's indicative of a broader truth, and it resonates with people because they see that this is basically true, even if all of the examples we can find are not accurate.
Speaking of which, we have another question from Sarah, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, on my flight tonight, the person sitting next to me noticed I am currently reading The Chronicles of Narnia. I told him I'd never read them as a kid and thought I'd give them a try now. He said he loves C.S. Lewis and proceeded to discuss the books with me at length. At the end of our conversation, he asked if I'd ever read Ayn Rand because, quote, if I like The Chronicles of Narnia, I would really enjoy The Fountainhead, especially if you've only read two books. Is this true? Would you consider enjoying The Chronicles of Narnia a solid basis for someone to enjoy The Fountainhead?" Sarah, no, Sarah, I would not.
You know, John, I've never read The Fountainhead.
I got 16 problems with this guy sitting next to Sarah on the airplane. Number one.
Gonna list them out. Oh, goodness. This is gonna,
you gonna be a high-quality never, podcast. Ever interrupt somebody when they're reading a book to tell them that you have also read that book. The only exception to this, and it is a questionable exception, is if you have written the book in question. It is sometimes, only sometimes, acceptable, I think, to say, FYI, I wrote that book. So
yeah, I did once see someone reading The Fault in Our Stars in a bookstore, and I was like, nope, not gonna do it.
Yeah.
Not going to do it. Just.
No, and that's probably the right call.
Oh, I mean, think definitely. What would I have done? Hey, my brother wrote that book. Look at me. I
would have been like, no, I mean, I might have walked up to them and said, like, that's a good one. You should buy it.
You know, when I go into Barnes & Noble, I do go to your section and I turn them facing out. Because if it's just the spine, you don't not get into as much shelf real estate. So I gotta rearrange some stuff so that your books can face out. I hope you appreciate that work that I'm doing for you.
I do appreciate that, but I also always feel like it maybe hurts somebody else who's probably a nice person, but I do appreciate it anyway.
You shouldn't do it, but I'm allowed because it's my brother.
The number two thing is, if you like The Chronicles of Narnia, it does not mean that you will enjoy The Fountainhead. All it means is that that person has read like an extremely narrow set of fiction. I can probably name like five other books that person has read. probably some Robert Heinlein, however you pronounce his name.
I bet he's read the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Probably read the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I suspect he's read 1984, but like not in a way that really took it to heart.
You believe being
Fahrenheit 451. I don't know if you know this, Hank. Lord of the Flies. I don't know if you know this about me, but I hate The Fountainhead. I hate it. I know a lot of people listening out there right now don't hate it, and I'm sorry because I probably am making you feel like not great, and I'm sorry. I don't want to make you feel that way, but it's just, I just hate it. I think the world would be better if it didn't exist. And I think the ideas in it are a vintage example of what you just described, where you create a fictional world in which a bunch of things that are not actually true are true. And then because people feel like it reflects something true about their experience that is based on the idea that they are somehow special or unique and the world is aligned against them, but it's not aligned against other people. It's just...
I've got another question, John. It comes from Becky, who asks, "Dear Green Brothers,
third thing I don't like in this situation."
John, can you skip the middle 13 things and skip straight to 16?
Yeah, but I'm starting a spinoff podcast called Issues I Have with the Guy Sitting Next to Sarah.
Okay, well, I'm also excited to hear that. This one is from Becky, who asks, Dear Greed Brothers, I'm a U.S. citizen working in Mexico for the year with an NGO, and it's recently come to my attention that my Mexican colleagues were taught and firmly believe that there are five continents, Africa, America, Asia, Europe, and Oceania. And I, on the other hand, I and the other U.S. citizens in the office were taught and believed until recently that there were seven continents, Africa, Asia, Europe, North America, Oceania, and South America. Although this was an earth-shifting discovery for me, I can appreciate that continents are...
That was only six.
What, I didn't say all of them?
You didn't say all of them, but it's kind of better that way because it points to how made up continents are, so just go on.
Although this was an earth-shifting discovery for me, I can appreciate the continents are a social construct. So my question is this: is there a right social construct to teach?
Yes.
Oh, there is?
Yes. First off, I think it's crazy that we differentiate between Europe and Asia when they are clearly, obviously, inarguably one continent.
It's interesting that the Mexican colleagues also think that Europe and Asia are separate continents. I think that there's really only one argument to be made, John. In my opinion,
yeah,
there is one continent.
No. There used to be one continent. I agree, but now there are two continents.
I'm willing to accept two because there are two really big. But if you look from the top, all that stuff's really close together.
Yes, but we don't look from the top because nobody lives up at the top because it's so cold. I mean, it's getting warmer every year, but it's still fairly cold.
I'm just saying, I just flew from America to Europe, and I don't think I saw the ocean the whole time.
I'm going to just go ahead and call BS on that one. maybe it was a cloudy day, but you flew over the ocean, I promise.
I flew over some limited swaths of ocean.
So the two continents, just to be clear, the two continents, this is like my argument that everything is essentially a shade of brown.
That's why I feel like there's one continent.
I mean, I'm concerned that I'm undermining my authority so much that a bunch of people are going to go out and read The Fountainhead, or alternately, that I hate The Fountainhead so much that it's going to make people want to read it. Maybe I should just ignore it, because actually, the opposite of love, Hank, is not hate. It's apathy. Anyway. Anyway, there are two continents. There is Afro-Eurasia, which is obviously one continent, and then there is the Americas, which is obviously one continent. Now, I realize this leaves out a bunch of places like Hawaii, Australia, New Zealand. Those places are not, they just don't count.
Well, no, it's not that they don't count. Do you have to be on a continent?
No, Greenland.
No.
Nobody argues that Greenland is a continent, but it is a large landmass that contains people. Iceland is not a continent. Neither is Australia slash... I mean, I understand the Oceania argument because you want to include all the people, but let's... You can't include all the people because we're talking about weird social constructs. There's two continents, Afro-Eurasia. There's three continents, Afro-Eurasia, Oceania. I'm backing down on Oceania. Oceania? I don't even know how to say it. It's such a made-up idea that I don't even know how to say the word. I'm backing down.
But there are, let's establish, are there people who are not on continents?
Yes.
Yes, Hawaiians. And astronauts.
I'm pretty sure, actually, Hawaii is technically part of Oceania.
Because
Oceania, it's just like, it's all-inclusive of the oceans. I think it might include Madagascar.
Yeah, Oceania, Madagascar, Hawaii, and Greenland. Well, that's what Oceania is.
Definitely Greenland is in Oceania. I don't think you'll find any disagreement about that. The question is, are the Caribbean islands in Oceania? Like, what about Bermuda? Bermuda is like, I've never been to Bermuda, but I was like, I was thinking maybe it would be fun to go to Bermuda. I would like to go on a beachy vacation. And so I was like looking on Google Maps all, you know, just like south of Florida where all the Caribbean islands are. And I was like, man, I cannot find Bermuda anywhere here. That's because it's nowhere near there. It's off like South Carolina.
Yeah, it's up there where the Bermuda Triangle is.
First off, I have no... I thought the Bermuda Triangle was just south of Jamaica.
Nope. It's up by Bermuda.
I'm pretty sure the... Okay, first off, just not to correct you, Hank, but the Bermuda Triangle, one point of it is in Bermuda, the other point is in South Florida, and the third point is in Puerto Rico. So, in fact, a number of Caribbean islands are inside the Bermuda Triangle. I'm not as much of an idiot as you would like to have me believe. However, Bermuda itself is like basically, it's basically one of like Maine's outer islands. I mean, it is much closer to Canada than it is to Jamaica.
It sounds like when you say Bermuda, you're like, oh yeah, this is gotta be but I mean, I think it is fairly warm and tropically because it's in the middle of the ocean and it's really far off the coast. It's a weird thing.
It seems like one of the locations that would have been mentioned in the classic Beach Boys song Kokomo.
Indeed, Bermuda is the first one in the list.
Oh, it is mentioned. Bermuda, Jamaica, girl, I want to take you, I believe is the did I just violate copyright?
No, it's not. It's Bermuda, Bahama, come on pretty mama, that's the second one. It's the second one.
Okay, there's no it begins Aruba Jamaica.
Ooh, I want to take you to Bermuda.
Bermuda
Bahama
is third.
It's in the second stanza.
And then Key Largo, Montego, baby, why don't we go. Is there really a place off the Florida Keys called Kokomo? Because there's a place about 40 minutes north of me called Kokomo, Indiana, and I would not describe it as tropical.
I don't think that there is a real place called Kokomo Sandals Cay is a privately owned island in Jamaica that was formerly called Kokomo Island, but I think after the song, I'm going to check. Formerly called Kokomo Island, it was originally named after the song that was not written by the Beach Boys, just performed by them. The inspiration for the song was a poolside bar in Isla Morada in the Florida Keys. So,
who wrote the song?
John Phillips, Mike Love, Terry Melcher, and Scott
Mike
McKenzie?
Love is in the Beach. Mike Love is in the Beach Boys.
Okay,
for the record.
Well, what about Terry?
I don't know. Is John Phillips of? Isn't John Phillips in like Peter, Paul, and Mary or something? Probably not in Peter, Paul, and Mary, since he's not named Peter, Paul, or Mary.
No, he was in the Beach Boys and also the Mamas and the Papas.
The Mamas and the Papas. Yes. I was close. Okay, I was close. All right.
But he was not in the Beach Boys. He was just associated with the Beach Boys, according to this Wikipedia page. His name is not Ryan, so I don't know why I'm on his Wikipedia page right now.
Yeah. Anyway, the best part about this whole bit, Hank, is that literally nobody who listens to this podcast remembers the Beach Boys song Kokomo, except for you and me, because it came out in 1989. So, like... and also, I don't think it was that big of a hit. I think our parents just liked it a lot. So, sorry to everyone who's listening.
I cannot believe that it came out in 1989. I always assumed that it was much earlier than that because most of the Beach Boys stuff was much earlier than that. Second, it was me and my girlfriend in third grade. It was our song.
Was it really?
It was.
That's pretty cute.
Yeah.
I gotta say, that's pretty cute. You know, my first song with a girl... was that Tiffany song.
I Think We're Alone Now?
Well, I Think We're Alone
Now, not
which
by
I owned
Tiffany.
On vinyl.
Oh, yeah.
Probably not. Yeah, I know that was a cover. I owned that on vinyl. My first two vinyl records were Michael Jackson's Thriller, which is a properly good album, and Tiffany's I Think We're Alone Now, which does not hold up that well.
I do remember you owning that record. John is not making this up. Do you remember what my first vinyl was, John?
I 100% know what your first vinyl was. I don't know if you know, but I'm 100% positive. Do you want to say it at the same time?
Sure.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, the
Supergirls.
Chuck E. Cheese album.
Oh, you're right. It probably was the Chuck E. Cheese album.
It was 100% Chuck E. Cheese 45 that played like Happy Birthday on one side. It might have even been Showbiz Pizza. It played Happy Birthday on one side, but it wasn't the usual Happy Birthday song. It was da 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 da. I think it's your birthday.
Yeah, yeah, that one. Uh-huh. I think it's your birthday. Is that what they say? I was thinking that it was the Supergirls album, but that was later. Which was like a collection of a bunch of like girl rock bands from the 60s and 70s on two LPs.
Yeah. That was actually a pretty
really
good album.
Good. It was good. I think that Papa got it for me off the Time Life. Time Life subscriptions.
Quick, quick follow-up question. What question are we answering?
Really for people, who were born significantly before 1980. Like we've really made this. We've limited the scope of our audience dramatically with this last conversation. But there is one continent, and Kokomo is not on it.
Oh, that's how we got here. The continents. Oh my God. Oh my God. I wish I could get a diagram of the series of sentences that led to this moment.
Well, we'll work through it. Do you want to move on, or can we just admit that continents are a made up idea? And
before we move on, I just have to quickly say that today's podcast is brought to you by Sandals. Mm. Sandals. Secretly sponsoring this podcast. Can we maybe get 378 free sandals days, Hank?
No, thank you. Honestly, I do not have the time or interest for any sandals days. This podcast is also brought to you by the media. The media. You don't like us for some reason.
Hank, I'm just going to stop you right there and say that I love a good all-inclusive vacation, and I do not like you talking smack about them, and I suspect when your kids get older, you'll like it too. And of course, today's podcast is also brought to you by Oceania. Oceania, a word that John is trying to learn how to pronounce.
And finally, this podcast is brought to you by Subpar Combs. They're not very good.
But they were free.
Yeah. All right, John, I got one more question for you. It's about me.
Yeah.
I hope that's okay.
Sure.
This question comes from Lily, who asks, Hank, what are amber lamps? I love your song Amber Lamps, but it's so relaxing. But I had absolutely no clue what it was about, so I looked up what are amber lamps, and I found a very odd meme. Did you write an entire song about a meme? The meme was created in 2010, so it's entirely possible that your album Ellen Hardcastle, which came out in 2011, could have a song about a meme? I'm very confused and would like an answer. Forever confused and obsessed with books, Lily. Yep. That's all I gotta say. That is where... Yep. It is a nice, calm, soothing song that is about a meme.
Yeah, Hank wrote a song about a meme. It's not even really his first song about a meme. I would say it's one of the lesser known memes, and it's also one of Hank's lesser known songs.
It is, yeah. I mean, honestly, I was finishing that album, and I was like, I really feel like there should be one more song on this album, and then I was like. Okay, well, I guess if something strikes me, and then it struck me, and I recorded it, and I put it on there, and I did it all in an afternoon by myself. So it's a bit of a departure on that album. It's like suddenly what are we doing now? But yeah, it's about a meme.
All right. Speaking of what are we doing now? It's time for the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon. Hank, do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Oh, the news from Mars. It's bad news from Mars, John. Mm. So you'll remember that Donald Trump, our president of my country, said that he would like to see, and he was rooting for and was excited about getting astronauts on Mars during, quote, during my first term or at worst, during my second term. So NASA has responded, they're not going to do that. That's basically that NASA
like
officially
the official
has said
NASA response
no.
Is, yeah. Nah.
Yeah, they have said, the White House asked us to look at the plan that we have today and see if we can keep going on that current plan, said the acting administrator, Robert Lightfoot, who is what an amazing name for an administrator of NASA. They have not asked us to go to Mars by 2024. It's terrible news for me, John. But it's confirmed that Donald Trump was like, all right, jump over this 50-foot high building. And NASA was like, can we have, like, I don't know, $1 trillion? And they were like, that's not how this works. And they were like, well, no, we cannot unaided jump over a 50-foot tall building.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a huge surprise, Hank, that Donald Trump said that he was going to be able to do something that he's struggling to execute. It's kind of been a theme of the presidency so far. The news from AFC Wimbledon, well, Hank, it's the silly season, as they call it. It's the off season. We've got three long, brutal, horrible months of this. However, the silly season kicked off in earnest earlier today, Hank, when a news report came out in which Wimbledon manager Neil Ardley said that he, quote, might have to do some wheeling and dealing in order to improve the squad. Not a lot of money at AFC Wimbledon. It's not a particularly well-funded team owned by its fans, as I might have mentioned a few times, not owned by some billionaire. So it's going to be difficult to improve the squad, but it's obviously also necessary to improve the squad due to the lack of a goal of the month in April, but due to no goals. So that might mean some selling, might mean some players will get sold. That is at least the takeaway that a lot of people on Twitter have, is that players might need to get sold in order for other players to be bought. Which would be a shame, because I really like the current AFC Wimbledon squad. But I'll tell you what I also like: staying in League One.
Yes, me too.
You weren't listening, but that's okay. I'm not mad at you. Hank, what did we learn today?
Oh, we learned that Gemini is so high. It's so high in the sky.
We learned that Bermuda, Jamaica, Madagascar, Australia, New Zealand, Greenland, and Antarctica are all in the same continent.
Of Oceania. We also learned that Hank and John, don't ask us about the Fountainhead.
Yeah, just don't bring it up. And lastly, we learned that Hank's first album was a 45 from either Chuck E. Cheese or Showbiz Pizza.
It was definitely Showbiz Pizza, because we didn't have a Chuck E. Cheese back then, John. It was all, you know, Showbiz.
We grew up in different times, guys. It was hard out there.
That's right. And we listened to the Beach Boys' later hits.
All right, it's time for us to go record our weekly podcast, This Week in Ryan's, which you can get over at patreon.com/dearhankandjohn. Don't feel obligated. You're not missing much. But if you want to, you can sign up for it. We appreciate it, and it helps us fund complexly shows like SciShow and Crash Course and The Art Assignment and Sexplanations and lots of other stuff. So thanks to everybody who donates through the Patreon. Thanks to all of you for listening, and I think Hank is going to read the credits now.
Yes, this podcast is edited by Nicholas Jenkins. It's produced by Rosianna Hulse-Rojas and Sheridan Gibson. Our social media manager is Victoria Bongiorno. Our music is by the great Gunnarola. You can email us at hankandjohn@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at Hank Green and at John Green. We love to see your tweets. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.